Welcome everyone to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is Channel Authentication Records. Today's presenter is Bill Newcomb. Bill works in WebSphere MQ Distributed Support. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Bill. You may begin.
Thank you, David. Hi, everyone. I'm here to talk about the new Channel Authentication Records that were added in MQ Series version 7.1. And these are added to give more precise control over access granted to connecting systems at a channel level. So let's go to slide two. So channel authentication records allow you to define rules about how inbound connections into the queue manager should be treated. Inbound connections could be client channels, or they could be queue manager to queue manager channels. And these rules can specify whether connections are allowed or blocked. Now, if the connection in question is allowed, the rules can provide a user ID that the channel should run with or indicate that the user ID provided by the channel, which would be flowed from the client or defined on the channel definition, is to be used. Rules may also be rogue connections from IP addresses or ranges of IP addresses. So, and I've already talked about this, so let's go to slide three. Okay. Administration of the rules is through the use of run MQSC, set channel auth commands, PCF commands, which are used by MQ Explorer, and additionally, the MQ Explorer GUI provides a wizard to walk you through the steps for setting up these rules. And at the end of the wizard, the MQSC command that would do the same job as you have done in the wizard is displayed in a window that you can cut and paste from it to put in a script for future use. I think that's kind of typical. I'm not talking too much about the commands here other than this is the way you, they're normal type run MQSC commands, programmable command format, and, of course, the Explorer GUI. Slide four, please. Now, these rules can be used to allow a connection, set up appropriate identities for channels to use when they run against the queue manager, block unwanted connections, ban privileged users. The definition of a privileged user is slightly different depending on what platform you're running on, your queue manager on. There's a special value that's been created for the set channel auth commands. It's called *mqadmin, which has been defined to mean any user that would have privileged access on this platform. And this special value can be used when you define a rule to check against the final user ID to be used by the channel to ban any connection that is about to run as a privileged user. Now, this will also catch any blank user IDs flowed from clients, for example. Now, this check is done at runtime, so there's not a list of what privileged users are. At runtime, when it comes in to actually execute the rule, it checks on the operating system to see whether or not this particular user would be a privileged user, and if it is, it will block it. Rules may use the remote IP address, SSL, TLS, distinguished name, the client user ID, and the remote queue manager name for qualification to help identify the channels that the rules apply against. Slide five. There is a list of IP addresses you may specify that the listener configuration will have access to. If any one of these IP addresses attempts to start an inbound channel connection, the listener will bounce the connection prior to starting a channel instance to process any data, for example, an SSL handshake, that might need to be read before knowing what the channel name is. If the queue manager is not running, it will still have access to this configuration, and it will still block specified IP addresses. Now, of course, say the queue manager is not running, but the listener would definitely have to be running. So if the listener is running and the queue manager is down, the listener still has access to this list of IP addresses that should be blocked. If you look at the first line, you can see it says set channel auth asterisk, and the asterisk is the required entry for this list because it says we're not going to look at channel names, and we're just going to look at IP addresses. And then there's a list there, and that list can be a specific IP address or it can be a range. The ranges and masks that can be put in there are in the information center, and they're well-defined there. This is to be noted that this is not a replacement for an IP firewall. However, it does provide a way for an MQ administrator to implement temporary blocking until the IP firewall is updated, or for a short period of time, making it not worthwhile to update the firewall. The intention is really that there shouldn't be any or very few entries in this. So it's really a temporary solution for until you can update this in the right place, or if you know that there's something that's going to happen for a short period of time, you might want to put it here. Okay. A denial of service attack on the listener, while really the place of the firewall to deal with, would mean high CPU in the listener if it had to deal with a repeated connection attempt from an inbound connection. This and the fact that we would like to quietly ignore network pingers if they don't send any data and only raise blocking events on them if they do send data means that the listener will hold any sockets that come from blocked IP addresses open for a period of time prior to closing the socket rather than immediately rejecting it. So if we get something from a pinger or something off the network for one of these IP addresses, what we're going to do is we're not going to immediately just close the socket back. We're going to hold it open for a while, go and do some other work, and then close it down. And this gives us time to do other work, and it also gives the program, especially if it's like a network pinger, it gives it time to close the socket before we do, allowing us to detect that we don't need to emit an event for this case. By default, the time we'll hold these sockets open is 30 seconds. Also, a lot of you, if you've been working with MQ series for a long time, have noticed that you'll get FDCs when your network pingers occasionally come in and hit the ports. They produce an FDC and VAR MQM errors, and there'll be some error that says that we got some unexpected data. So if you're blocking these, this will prevent those FDCs from occurring, and that's pretty good news. Slide 6. Okay, now we come to rules that work on channels, specific channels, and you can set up rules to match against all of the identifying characteristics listed there. And these rules can either indicate that a channel matching the rule should be blocked, should be allowed and assigned a provided user ID to use when it runs, or allowed and the user ID provided by the channel is to be used. You can use the channel name, of course. You can also use rules can be made to be used a connection arise from a specific distinguished name. If the client asserted a banned user ID, but its distinguished name is in this list to map it to another user ID, it will be deemed to have the asserted user ID and not the banned one. So basically, what happens here is the replacement of user IDs in the rules is checked before we check for the exclusion of user IDs. Rules can be made to be used should a connection arrive from a specific remote queue manager. And these queue managers can also be a generic name. They can have an asterisk that says match on certain characters, or they can be full queue manager names. So you can have generic sets of rules to match on patterns of queue managers. Rules can be made should a connection arrive asserting the specified user ID. It is often likely that the client-asserted user ID is not even defined on the server system. So this can be used to map it to the MCA user ID, which, of course, will be a server-side defined user ID. If the client asserted a banned user ID, but that user ID is in this map to map it to another user ID, it will be deemed to have the asserted user ID and not the banned one. Again, this allows you to replace user IDs that would have been banned otherwise. There is a list of user IDs which, if any of them are asserted, will cause the channel to end. The checking against this list of blocked user IDs runs after all things that can set the MCA user have completed, including security exits and the MCA user mapping feature. Okay, so basically all the mapping is done. We let the security exit handle it, and then we check to see if the asserted user ID is in the list. And if it is, we'll close the channel. Rules can be made to be used should a connection arrive from a specific IP address. If the client asserted a banned user ID, but its IP address is in this list, it's the same thing. It'll do the mapping and use the mapped ID and not the banned one. So the problem of an older Java client sending up blanks can be fixed by mapping, and it doesn't have to end up being banned. Now, IP addresses can be a specific address, range of addresses, or a pattern. The patterns that can be used to specify IP addresses are described in the Information Center. Now, if you have a port forwarder a DMZ session break or any other setup which will change the IP addresses presented to the queue manager, then mapping IP addresses is not necessarily suitable for you, your use, because you're not going to know for sure what's going to come in. One point of note, the inbound connections can be from any version of NQ. There is no requirement that the clients or remote queue managers also be on version 7.1 or later to be blocked or mapped by these rules. So the client connection can be version 6, version whatever, version 7.01, and the same for the remote queue manager. It has no effect on the use of these mappings. Now, when there's more than one rule from all that above, we see all those things that we can use to identify it, and there's a potential that you can have two or three rules that might map to the same channel. So when there's more than one rule that can match the inbound connection in question, then we define which rule will actually be used by defining the precedence of what is the most specific match. Now, SSL peer names are considered a more specific match than a queue manager name or a client user ID because there is much more detailed information in the SSL peer name. And IP addresses are considered the least specific since clearly more than one queue manager or client can be connecting from the same IP address. Hope that makes sense. Slide 7, please. Now, out of the box, we supply some rules. And there's actually three rules that we supply as a default. And the first rule you see here, which says set channel as asterisk type block user list asterisk MQ admin says to block any channel that comes in with a privileged user. And now this rule may break some channels that, if, that you currently have, but it will secure many more channels than it breaks. We believe it to be a worthwhile out-of-the-box position. The second rule secures the use of system.channels by disallowing any address from connecting. This stops hackers from connecting in the systemdef.receiver, for example. It also locks down the systemdef.servercon, which will probably hit a lot of people initially. I think there's quite a few customers out there that have, from days back, are using systemdef.servercon for a lot of their client connections and things, and so this would hit that. The third rule allows the system admin servercon, but it still be affected by the first rule if you try to use a privileged user ID. So some work must be done to provide a user ID that has access to do what is needed. These rules have affected a few people when they're doing migrations, and I'll talk a little bit. And so there was a tech note created, which is on the bottom of this page, which has really good information about what you might expect to see. If these rules hit you, you'll see 2035 authorization errors, and you'll see messages in the system log that indicate that your channel was blocked. And there's some good solutions for it in that tech note. I highly recommend that you read it. Now, the enabling of the channel authorization is through an alter queue manager, channel auth, enabled or disabled. And the way it works is if you create a new queue manager in version 7.1, by default, channel authorization will be enabled, and the three rules that you see will be acted on. Now, you can define the rules, whether it's enabled or disabled, but the queue manager won't act on them. Now, for a migrated queue manager, so if you have a version 7.01 or a version 6 queue manager and you decide to migrate it to version 7.1, channel auth will be disabled, so the system should work the way it did in the previous version. Where some customers are getting caught on this is they do side-by-side migrations. So they'll define a new queue manager with the same name, perhaps on another server or wherever they, however they do it, and then they'll copy over the object definitions, and then they'll cut over to the new queue manager. In that case, channel auth will be enabled, and you might all of a sudden see errors that you didn't expect. And we've seen a few cases of these. And again, that tech note that at the bottom of that page is a really great reference for what to do to solve that kind of problem. Of course, the easiest way to solve it is just to turn channel auth disabled. And if you're if you've moved over to production and you're in a hurry to get it solved, just alter queue manager channel auth disabled, and that'll turn it off, and then you can go back and look at it. Slide 8, please. Now, here's an example of a special pattern matching version of display command to show exactly what would happen to the channel matching these identifying attributes connected to the system. This should be, serve as a useful testing tool, service aid, and validation tool. Now, in the example I have now, I'm in run MQSC, and I enter display channel auth system.admin.serverCon match run check, and this tells me I'm going to do a runtime type check on this information. I'm going to have the user is going to be Nukem, and they're going to come in at this particular one. It could have been any address, but on this case, it's the local host. The result of that will be that the queue manager will check through the rules that it has, and in this case, we only have those three default rules, and it will display the results back. And in the case that we see here, it said AMQ 8878 is the display, channel auth asterisk, type block user. So what happened is we matched the block user rule, and the channel would be blocked. We gave you this to help you because to determine before you put something into your system how it's going to go. So you have to give it specific information. You have to say the name of the channel you're coming in, put the user ID in, give it an IP address that it's coming in from, and that'll simulate what if a real channel came in during runtime, and it'll tell you what rule it matches. We hope that your rules don't get so complicated that you really need to use this thing, but it's possible. Slide 9. So basically, how do we expect that you might want to use this? So here are some examples based on how we expect this to be used. Now, in the first line there, it says, we get, our business requires that we must make sure our system is completely locked down. So we start off with a rule with, that blocks everyone that doesn't match a more specific rule that we define will not be allowed in. So we have set channel app asterisk, again, any channel name, called type address map, any address, user source, no access, block them all. Now it's in warning mode here. So in warning mode, we won't actually block them. We'll put a message in the system log. And we'll actually go looking for the next rule that might have blocked them. Okay, the next two rules were to go with this. Our business requires that our business partners must all connect using SSL. So we will map their access from their certificate distinguished names. So we will have some rules that map specific distinguished names of our business partners to specific user IDs. Okay, so if we look at the second line there, it says set channel app bpchl dot asterisk. You're coming in on a channel that has that prefix on it. We're going to do an SSL peer map, and the SSL peer is going to specify Bank of Shetland. If we see that, we're going to slap an MCA user into there of Bank 123. If we see in the next entry, we see same channels, SSL peer map, but we see a different distinguished name. We see a Bank of Orkney. And in that case, we're going to put an MCA user of Bank 456. Now, previously, you might have done this by having separate channel definitions for each business partner, but now if you wish to, you can have them come over the same receiver definition because you can use this facility to change the user IDs. Okay, the fourth one. Our business requires that our administrators connect in using MQ Explorer, but don't use SSL. So we will map their access by IP address. So we have a rule that gives them all a single administrative access user ID based on a range of IP addresses. So as you can see, we got they're coming over the system admin server con. We're going to do an address map, and then there's an address range in here. So we said 9.20.1 through 30 dot asterisk. So anybody in that range will be given the MCA user of ADM user. Now, we assume that that's not a privileged user, but it has the access they need to use for their MQ Explorer, their administrative access. Our business requires that our internal cluster doesn't use SSL, but we must ensure that the correct queue managers can connect into the cluster. So we have a rule that gives access to the correctly named queue managers, but only if they come from a recognized IP address. So again, on that last one, so what we have is we have a generic cluster channel name, 2.clus.asterisk, type queue manager map, which says we're going to check the queue manager name. So we have a generic queue manager name, and of course it could be a specific name, and we could have multiple rules with multiple specific entries. But in this case, we have a generic name, and if we see that, we're going to put clus user in the MCA user, and they have to come from one of these IP address, 9.30. flap. Slide 10. Okay, well, that was the end of my presentation, and this is a list of additional resources that you can use to look at upcoming technical exchange webcasts and for more related information. And at this point, I'll turn it back over to David.
Thank you, Bill, for a great presentation. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. You can be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject WSTE Subscribe. Also, if there is a topic you would like to see scheduled, or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please let us know at that same email address. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us and let us know how we can make this program even better for you. We welcome any ideas that you may have. Thanks again for your participation. Now moving on to the question and answer session, I would like to remind you that for those of you who joined us via the web conference, you can also post your questions in the group chat. Precedence will be given to questions asked through the phone, and if time permits, we will also address questions in the group chat. At this time, Julie, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Our first question comes from Brent Morris. Your line is open, sir.
Yes, one real quick comment regarding the second to the last slide. It was very helpful to have you go over unique scenarios to show what the command line was. So thank you very much for that. That was very helpful. I was wondering, can you speak a little bit more regarding the type of logging we're going to see when exceptions are thrown?
Oh, yeah. There's really two things. One is this, which I didn't really talk about, was event messages will be generated that will show the channel the actions taken because of these authorization messages. And there's also going to be messages put in the queue manager error logs if the channel is blocked. I probably should have put examples in for that, and I apologize that I didn't. Now, that link that I talked about for the tech note on this page 7 that you're looking at, it actually does have examples of the messages that are going to be in the queue manager error logs, and it actually has examples of tracing, too. If you like to go through and read MQ traces yourself, it shows the type of entries that will be in a trace.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. And as it relates to Slide 6, could you just briefly go over again some of the logic that's used in comparing the different values? Because it appears to be complex, or if you can simply just refer to maybe another tech note, if not already that same tech note, that will kind of help us understand what is the hierarchy of us trying to put together.
Right. Right. Yeah, I didn't spend much time here because the hierarchy is actually, if you look in the information center, it's mapped out pretty well there as to what the hierarchy is. So I did just very briefly talk about it. Basically, the highest value on there is the SSL peer name, as I mentioned, and then the lowest is IP address. And, of course, channel name is pretty specific because if you put a channel name in there, it's only going to look at that particular channel anyways. But you could have a channel that had multiple same channel entries that had different information for IP address and client asserted user ID. Again, if it matches SSL peer name, that's the highest matcher, and it will use that. The lowest is IP address. And it's kind of like some of the other things with cluster workload and things that you need to really look in the information center that has a table that tells you exactly what happens when it goes to match these things. And really, that's why we also gave you the ability to use that display to do a run check to see what really does match, what rule is matched when you put in these values.
And as it relates to putting in IDs, that those are IDs that, you know, as we all have been burned in the past trying to understand IDs, whether they're going to be local IDs, whether they're a domain-related ID, that ID that we put in there when we do mapping, that ID needs to be able to be resolved by whatever the specific operating system is. Is that correct?
Right. For that queue manager, host has to be able to resolve that ID. So the inbound ID could be the ID of the client, which this host may know nothing about.
Right.
But you can map that to a host known ID, and that is definitely a key. That ID needs to be known by the host, has to be resolved by whatever operating system it's on.
Okay. Thank you so much. This is a wonderful presentation, and again, it was extremely helpful on the second to the last slide, the different scenarios, walking through the different scenarios to be able to better understand this. Thank you again.
You're welcome.
I am showing no further questions.
Okay, thank you, Julie. I do see one question in the group chat for you, Bill, and the question is, for Unix installations, would we add MQM in addition to the MQAdmin entry for block user?
No, you wouldn't. The asterisk MQAdmin was meant to be the generic one that catches MQM or MQ user underscore admin. It also will catch any ID that is in the MQM group. So in that example I showed earlier where I had my user ID Nukem in, and it got blocked because of the rule that said MQAdmin, the asterisk MQAdmin. And that's because when at runtime it went and looked up my user ID and says, hey, you're in the MQM group, so you're a privileged user, and it blocked it. So you don't have to worry about adding MQM or whatever the administrative access is on that platform. Asterisk MQAdmin covers all of that.
Okay, thanks, Bill. I don't see any other questions in the chat. So at this time, we will conclude.
We do have a question, Mr. Long. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you, Julie.
Alan Griffin, your line is open, sir.
So, you know, right now, you know, we've got a very old installation, a lot of different user IDs all across MCAs and all, and trying to get my hands around it and get it, you know, better controlled. So, you know, one, I can see, you know, using this, I need to take my administrators basically out of the MQM group, create a separate group for them, and give them the access they need. You know, is that what we're sort of seeing here?
Well, we are with the default rules. You don't have to decide that you want to do that. You can take the three rules that come, the one that says, you know, no administrators come in. You can remove that rule if it doesn't agree with the policy that you have at your company. So if you don't want to do that, you can remove that. Or you can say, well, we don't really want anybody to come in, but if they come in from these IP addresses, it's okay. So you can qualify that says no admins coming in unless they come from here.
Yeah, well, since we don't have static IPs for our admins, I have their ID. So
yeah, that might not help. I agree.
Yeah, I figure, you know, be better to pull them out of the MQM group, but they still have to be in there to do command line stuff. So, I mean, it's sort of, you know, I'm trying to understand that.
Basically, it does. If you leave that first rule in, which says nobody with administrator access, I mean, it takes some work then to set up authorizations for those remote administrators to do the work that's required. So you're going to have to use the OAN to set up some authorizations and set up a user ID that will allow them to do the work they need. It's really hard for me to say exactly what that is because it's going to be different for different businesses.
Oh, understood. But, yeah, I'm just trying to get some thoughts going in my head here, so. Anybody had any thoughts, I'd be appreciative. Thank you.
We do have another question from Brent Morris. Your line is open.
Yeah, just real quickly, without having a chance to look at the command, is there a way of being able to provide a list of all the commands, the mappings that have been associated with a specific queue manager? So if I need if I've got 10 queue managers and I need to confirm I'm being asked to, you know, for a security audit, I need to confirm what is the mapping, whether it's an SSL mapping, a queue manager mapping. Is there a summary report style command that I can issue, which it will then document all of the structure that's on there, whether it's the default structure or something that has been added in addition? Is that part of the command, or is that feature missing?
I think it's not there in the way that you're asking. Really, you only have the same type of command as if you were doing a display of the list of queues. You can just say display channel auth asterisk, and it'll list all the rules. But it doesn't format them in any neat way. It just shows the definitions for each rule.
Okay. If I could just pass that on as some feedback then. I mean, I'm sure you can appreciate it from an auditing standpoint. When we've got hundreds of queue managers being able to go out and issue something and have it come back with a report that we can then turn around and pick up or, you know, send to an ASCII text file so that we can provide that for auditing. That would be extremely helpful. So thank you so much again for this presentation.
Thank you.
Showing no further questions, sir.
Thank you, Julie. We do have a couple more in the group chat now, and the first one is, can the rules be entered from mainframe queue manager?
Yeah, I don't see any reason why they can't. I'm not clear on that question. If it's version 7.1, it's going to be able to issue the rules. Now, I'm not a mainframe guy. I'm really distributed. Used to work mainframe, but not in many years.
Okay, and then I see one more question. All it says, I think it's a question about a command, but all it says is DMP MQCFG.
Right, dump MQ config. That's the utility that you can now use to save all the queue manager object definitions and authorities. And yes, if you use DMP MQ config, it will also dump these definitions. But again, it's still pretty much in the same format as if you had just done it from run MQC. But it will. But you can put dump MQ config into a text file and then use it.
Okay. And then another question just came in. We use a product tool called Block IP3. Does this functionality replace that?
I certainly think it could. It depends on, I mean, Block IP3, I think, is user modifiable by the customer that they can set up rules about connections coming from certain IP addresses. And definitely... Genelot has the ability to block and map rules based on IP address. So I would say, yes, it certainly could replace Block IP3.
Okay, thanks. And we have another question. Is there an equivalent to DSP MQ AUT for channel off records?
I guess we would go to the question above. The DMP MQ config would dump those, and I'm pretty sure you could probably tell it to dump just channel off records. I'd need to verify that to be sure. DSP MQAUT is the way to display authorizations for the OAM, and it doesn't have the same equivalent for channel authorization records. And maybe that's would be the solution to the previous question.
Okay, thank you. And then the last question as of right now is, what is the difference between channel and queue manager?
What is different between channel and queue manager? I guess we're talking about earlier as far as being able to use those attributes. That would especially apply to like cluster channels where multiple queue managers use the same channel name. So you may want to say, if this connection comes from this queue manager, which is something which is information we can get when the channel connects, take these actions, do this mapping or block it or allow it. So the difference is, okay, I have a cluster channel called 2 cluster 1 or something like that, but he comes from queue manager A. And if he comes from queue manager A, I says, okay, I'll allow that connection. But if he comes from queue manager B, I'll disallow it. So that's the difference.
Okay, thank you. I'm not seeing any more questions in the chat, unless there are more questions on the phone. We'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable. We appreciate your participation and hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Bill, for presenting today.
Thank you.